Okay.
So it's a simple problem, but give us a way to actually implement in Excel. So just look at this problem, and then look at the Excel solution for it. Okay. So I'm going to bring up the Excel solution for it. See, that's the Excel solution for it. The answer over there, you can see this person, the answer over here, that's the objective, the decision, decision variables, those are the objective function coefficients, that's the objective function value. Those are constraints. This person, that's coefficients of the constraints. And this column over here, that's the left-hand side, and versus over here, right-hand side. Everybody okay with this? Anybody have any difficulties to solve this problem? Nobody, am I right? Nobody should have any problem to solve this. Okay, now, let's look at the exercise, your homework. You can take that out, and we can see why I say that, okay? This is the problem we have, okay? Let me switch over to the classroom example I give you. So I want to see, where to start. What's the first step, second step? So you know why we get where we are here, okay? So if you look at this page, just give a second for the projector to warm up, and should be on any time now. The assignment you got is exactly the same as the example in the classroom. Okay, so difference is so minor; it's very very little. And if you look at the each of these time slots, and you should be able to figure out the meaning of each. And if we are business majors, you should have no problem to understand when we have A1 amount to get in, we're going to get a 1.018 A1 by the end of the month. And it's the same thing for B1, C1, D1. The question is to minimize the summation of the investment in the first period. For your situation, you want to minimize, or your parents want to minimize, the total investment you will see, you know, they're going to kind of put down last year when you will go to college. Okay? So that's the identical situation. You want to minimize this A1, B1, C1, D1 in such a way you have plenty of money to support yourself, pay tuition fees, and your living expenses. Okay? So you have to develop a chart like this to understand the first. I bet some of you may not. Okay? Once you have this, you come up with a objective function. Minimize these four, okay? And we will see how we implement those. And then you can see how we convert each of these columns over here into a constraint. A2 equals 1.018 A1. That's this column over here. That's one constraint. Okay? And then you look at this column, this column, this column, this column, this column. You get different constraints. That's how we did. Okay? Find my cursor over here. So that's what you get for the constraints. And then if you look at the risk factors going to figure in like this. On top, you can see the risks. You know, those are rating are given. And then in this example, we have risk for each. Months, for example, each time period less than equals 5. But in the homework you have, it's less than equals 4. That's it. That's all the difference. Okay? So you need to kind of formulate initially like this, and then convert them like this. Okay? For each of them, you need to convert something like this. So month 1, month 2, month 3, month 4, month 5. You got a month, you know, year 7, for example. Right hand side is going to be zeros. And left hand side, you're going to get a combination of different elements. That's part of the exercise you have to do. Okay? get that done, what's next? This. Put your formulation in the standardized form. See, on top A1, A2, until D1, those are the decision variables. And then you can see those constraints now in the format is given each row is a constraint. See? And then you add the risk rating constraint at the bottom over there. So if you touch this, that's the whole thing. If you look at this formulation now, okay? Look at this formulation. Even though we got a lot of blanks, but the format of this is identical to the one we had before. If I can go back there, you know, and let me see, I have any trouble to go back where I was, okay? So, LP example, yeah. See, the format, this format is identical to this format. Let me press the right key. See, what's the difference between this one and that one? No difference. You see the pattern? Even though that one got a lot of blanks, you know, it's identical to this one. How do you implement that in Excel? Very easy. I commented multiple times, you know. In this case, you can see, in this case, you optimize this objective function value over here, and X and Y are the changing cells. Those are the left hand side and right hand side. You need to specify the constraints properly. Excuse me. I think I got the I believe the allergy for the it's a pollen, you know, those flowers. Come on. And I tell you one story. Back in '84, I was in Hong Kong, and one time my teacher from New York and teaching the business English. And one day he gave a lecture. He said he had a professor, you know, enjoy lecture so much in a big auditorium, you know, 200 people, no window, just like this, no window. The guy enjoyed lecture, just watched every single day, watch the ceiling and talking, hour and a half, whatever, messed up. Yeah, people get in, he started, you know, by the time it's over, people walk out, he finished. One day, you know what happened? Power was off. The guy was so enjoyed his talking, he didn't know nothing. People just walk out quickly, you know, he was then by himself was talking. Obviously, you know, you can see the exaggeration, right? So I tell you what, because I got an allergy today, you know, during the time I was talking, if I feel into sleep, you know what to do, am I right? Walk out quietly, let me enjoy it. Okay. Now, they look at on top of the formulation, okay? See, this problem, you know, if you look at the formulation of this problem, very much the same as the one we had. You know, if I can grab the solution now, so, you can see the formulation. I believe everybody, you know, should be able to formulate this in such a way without much problem. Okay? Is that what you get? Close to what you get? Check yours. I think that's pretty much everybody got this. Okay? What you need is to convert this into the simple format we have. That is like this. That is like this, okay? That is like, let me just come back here. That is like this, okay? That's what we learned before for several weeks. If you can put that problem into this format, Nobody has any problem, am I right? Do not spend too much time, you know, try to make this fancy, you know. You understand the problem first, and then try to make this fancy. Okay? Now, on top of this, I'm going to post this page on Blackboard, okay? So let me find my cursor here. So my hands are just not working. Okay, now let me try to move up a little bit. Okay. Now, if you look at this top part here, this is the format given in the textbook. If you're very efficient, effective in Excel, it's okay. Do it. Otherwise, like me, I didn't spend much time at all on Excel. What I did, I spent this morning before class 15 minutes. I converted this back into this because somebody posted a request on Blackboard, you know, they have difficulties. Look at this. 10 or 15 minutes, you know, before class, I got all this done. Okay, now, look at this. Let me move this over so I can see a little bit more. If you look at this, you can see A1, A2, A3, those are the A's, and A, B, C, D. So that gives you the decision variables. And those are the cells which document amount by the end, okay, the decision variables. Those are potential returns. The one on top, 100000100, and then you have another one on top of this. Those are the places I use 0-1 variables to indicate in the objective function over here, we're only interested in the first period. Whatever amount of money your parents put in before you start college. You know, 1 year return, 2 year returns, 3 year return, you know, 4 year return or 7 years. So that's the requirement because, you know, in the middle rent, you don't care. You only care to minimize the initial amount of invested. Okay? So by using 0-1, if you multiply that 0-1 column over there or row there, multiply by this corresponding row, what are you gonna get? You're gonna get all the zeros. Doesn't matter what you have in this row, if over here you get a zero, the product is gonna be zero. Is that correct? Zero multiply anything gonna be zero. So the only four places potentially you are not gonna get a zeros, that's corresponding to A1, B1, C1, and D1. Is that correct? One times anything equals anything. That's the only chances you just minimize that product. See? What's Excel to do it? Equal sum product. Okay? And then you highlight those 0-1 rows, press common, highlight this row, and then, you know, close parentheses, you're done. Okay? So let me bring over so you can see what I did here. And no any difference. You know, that's why I kind of, it doesn't matter how many times you say it, you know, until you work on assignment, you do not know what I'm talking about. Okay? That's the equation we use. If you look at this equation, look at it. Okay? Look at on top of there. You see, sum product C32, Q32. 32 refers to those 0-1 rows. Okay? And C35, Q35, that's this row. See? Understand now? That's the objective function. Now, see what the textbook did. That bothered a lot of people, and you never figured it out. That's this one. Okay? They use a summation, sum if. Let's look at the function of it. Sum if C34, Q34, 34 refers to the index of the years the investment was made. One refers to first year, two second year, and so on. So the first C34, Q34, refers to the checking fields. What's criterion? Because you got an if there. So if require a criterion. What is a criterion? One. So what are they doing? They're looking for whatever is in this row, okay, row 34, they're looking for only ones, only one, numeral one. So where you got numeral one? A1, B1, C1, D1. You see what I'm saying? Once you see those, you add together C35 to Q35. C35 to Q35, but you only add those corresponding elements matching one in the previous row. That's it. That's what he did. Again, you do not need to spend time on those kind of things at all. Excel just has so many great stuff. I'm going to show you one, you know, we did it before, and I totally forget it until, you know, last week, you know, somebody mentioned that. I said, gee, we did that, so I'm going to show you. You're going to spend tons of time, you know, if you try to get it perfected, you know, in Excel. My kind of advice, emphasize on learning, emphasize on modeling, emphasize on concepts we learned from different chapters, different sections. Excel, secondary. Because if you get a job, you know, on the job, every day you're going to do it, you're gradually going to encounter all those beautiful stuff. But not necessary. I just learned that this morning, some if. I didn't look at it because I did not need it. Why bother with it? I can use some product to do the same thing. You follow what I'm saying here? Each of these constraints identical to some product. No any difference. That's the one we had. You know, your guys used to it. See? Look at this one. Equals this row 39. You can see some product C39 to Q39. That's this whole row. Okay? Multiply by C35, Q35. What is a C35, Q35? That's the decision variable amount. You see? That's identical to what we had before. No any difference. Copy, paste over. Okay? That's it. Right hand side, you can see those are zeros. Those are the given constraints. And those are equal signs. Those are less than equals. And if you want, you know, you can specify, you look at your add-in, and then specify your solver, and you can solve it. You solve it. Click, you know, solve, it's going to give you the answer. No any difference. So the sensitivity analysis table, the answer report, going to be identical to the one you got. No difference. So even though the formulation, you know, it looks a little bit bulky, you know, got so many, you know, rows and so many columns. So this, what the author did, you know, in the example in the chapter, looks more compact. I don't care. You okay with that? Because I personally see, you know, that's going to kind of put your emphasis in the important stuff. So any of you spend, you know, quite a lot of time, 1 or 2 hours, try to solve this problem, you try to solve a wrong problem. That's what I might comment. Spend time, go back to my notes, you know, and understand what we did over here in the class notes, you know. And the whole chapter, you know, the whole class was recorded with video. Go over there, go through that, be sure you fully understand. I do not think you have any problem to work out the sample here. Okay? Question? Everybody, you okay with that? That's the kind of comments I have, okay? So do not spend a lot of time to work on wrong problems. You spend the time to understand the problem, set up the model properly, and then spend very little time, because during the time you understand the problem, you already know what's the best way, what's the shortcut. You're going to save a lot of time. Okay, so that's these assignments. Any question? No question, nobody? You can hand in your stuff, so just put it, you know, put it on the table over here, so I'll get on the paper, okay? What we're going to do today is to briefly cover integer programming, okay? We cover integer programming, we look at where the integer programming is going to be applied, and then we're going to, you know, you can do that. And then we're going to see some applications. That's pretty much. So we're going to give a short example, and then we're going to review test number one from last semester. So I was in the sitting in the class and took a test with people, those students. So I'm going to kind of let you just go through the test piece by piece. You know, we're going to do that. I don't know if you can finish, and you're going to work out the grades. That's up to you. I will not collect those. And I seriously believe the test is going to be from test one and test two, from last semester, formula-wise, very much the same. And difficulties and amount of work, you know, to match those. And keep in mind, you know, the test one, test two, we're going to go through. It's 1 hour, 15 minutes work. Okay? And you're going to have 3 hours, maybe more, if you want. You see what I'm saying? I will not limit your time, so that's the kind of benefit you're going to get. But again, you know, we're going to go over test one today. Test two, Thursday. And then next Tuesday, we're going to answer whatever the questions you're going to have for this part of the course. That will gear up to the test three on Wednesday next week. You understand what I'm saying? So you need to schedule your time and go back to the contents. So next Wednesday's contents are going to cover linear programming, graphic solution, sensitivity analysis, and modeling. That's it. Know anything kind of from previous two tests. And then, you know, we're going to have a break, you know, next Thursday after the test. Not this Thursday, next Thursday after the Wednesday's test. No class. Okay, so next Thursday is yours because you did the test on Wednesday. And then the final week, next week is 14th week, we have our test. 15th week, Tuesday, we're going to review test 2. Remember we had a test 2 and work on the QM problem, the simulation? That's what we're going to do that Tuesday. And then Thursday, last day of class, we're going to work on test 1. That's the forecasting, decision theory, and the regression. I think, you know, everybody by then should be ready for the final exam. Okay? I post the update for the schedule on Blackboard. What I say is confirmed to that sequence, I believe. So you match your time, work that out, and then ask questions. You're going to benefit a lot. Okay? Let me go back to what I promised. You know, we need to get into what we call the linear integer programming, and I want to bring your attention to this problem again. Let's look at this this problem over here. We've been discussing this problem for several weeks now. The company making two products, X and Y. The optimal solution over here is 2 1/7 and 1 3/7 as optimal solution. In many cases, if you look at the number of units to make may not be in fractions, decimal. Okay? Look at, you know, if you're in charge of the company's budgeting situation and you have 5 or 6 potential projects to fund and you have 20, 30 different requests or applicants, okay? You are going to fund integer number of projects. 5 projects, 4 projects, you are not going to fund 3.2 projects. Is that correct? Look at the scheduling problems. Each city, we have a call center. Washington, D.C., 911 call center, Harrisburg, Rockingham County, they have a combined call center. The operators there, they change shift based on certain hours. Rockingham Memorial Hospital, there's a lot of nursing homes. They also have nurses change shift on certain hours, you know, every 4 hours. 8 hours, you know, you can't, it's 12 hours, you can't change shift anytime you want, because that's going to make everybody's life very miserable, okay? So what I mean is, if your shift starts 4 hours increment, that's okay. So every 4 hours, 8 hours, 12 hours, you can change your shift, but not in between, okay? And so many of those applications, many. Now, what are we going to do if we encounter that kind of application? Integer programming is a way to model that. Again, the formulation side is more interesting than the solution side. Why? Because the solution side for you, for your guys, Excel will provide enough facility for it. If I, you know, just look at this problem, and I get on add in, and then specify premium, and then I look at it, you know, those are the problems, and you can see I specify a constraint over here. See this constraint? I specify as integer, you know, this constraint. You see that? This one? You just specify as integer. That's all you did. And then in the option area, you may do something over here to specify certain, you know, minor thing, and I'm going to talk about a little bit of it in just a few minutes. But other than that, you do not have anything. Just materially, significantly different than what you did. So solution is, process is not a problem. The problem is we need to understand the principles of integer programming. What's the difference between integer programming versus LP programming? Okay, actually you have a question?
Go ahead.
I think my eyes can't see very well.
You can't see?
Yeah,
so what do you want to do? I want to record this because I'm afraid somebody may need those, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you want to move to the front seat, you know?
Okay, I can just watch the video lectures.
Okay. But, yeah. Okay, now, let me shift the gear to the integer programming, so you know what I'm talking about here. And we are not going to get in a lot of this, and I want to just give you a very basic kind of overview of it, and... But again, there are a lot of very good applications. So you see, if you look at this first page in the chapter 6, integer programming, and give you an introduction and. Talk about what is integer programming and how we approach it and so on. So, and the kind of case they provide over here. So we're going to use a different case. So I just let you see what they have over here. So let me just make myself a little bit. Mm-hmm. Okay, now they. The example I'm going to use is this. Let me look at the example, okay? So this is the example I'm going to use. On page 243, if you look at on page 243, and the employee scheduling problem, that's the one we're going to use to go through the principles of integer in the program. What happened is, in this case, the company requires every day certain number of employees be on duty. Okay, so you can see those are the number of people each shift, each week you have to have. Must be more than this, okay? Otherwise you can't support the planned production activities. And potentially everybody work 5 days in a week, take 2 consecutive days off. that's the potential shift created. And you can see, somebody take off on Sunday and Monday, go to work from Tuesday to Saturday. And the wage is going to be $250 for each week. But each day of the 2 weekends, if anybody working, you're going to make $25 more. So if you look at the days off, you know, if somebody takes Sunday and Monday off, that means the guy actually works on Saturday, plus other 4 days. So that means the guy is going to get $25 more besides $655 salary in a week. So that's where 680 comes from. Okay? You tell me where this 705 comes from for somebody to take off Monday, Tuesdays.
Where is your from?
They're working on Saturday and Sunday, so they get $50.
Everybody follow Jules in.
Okay, so that's right. And then you can see if somebody take off in the middle of the week, you always make $50 more than otherwise. The last day you can see somebody lucky guy take off on Saturday and Sundays, you only make the base salary, base wage, $6.55. That's okay for everybody? So those are the information we have. What's the objective? Objective is to find a schedule which minimizes the total cost, which is going to meet the requirements, is going to cut the cost. That makes sense. If you look at the 911 call centers in DC or in Harrisonburg, a lot of complaints about their service. Why? If a call was received on time, policemen sent over on time, rescue squad sent over on time, that's life and death. Am I right? But if any situation, for whatever reasons, the rescue squad come over late and whatever people died, you know the kind of publicity. Am I right? It's very stressful work. And I actually chatted with the director in DC and also Harrisonburg, and just know a lot of operators, they just couldn't handle that after a while because you're traumatized by whatever on the other side of the phone, you know what I mean? But again, you know, this kind of scheduling is very, very useful, okay? And I bet, you know, anybody, whatever the majors you're going to have, and they're going to encounter these kind of problems later on for yourself in the doctor's office, you know, whatever, you know, consultants, you know, stuff, different type of projects, you're going to encounter kind of situation very much like this, okay? When we have this kind of problem, where we start, just look at this problem, okay? So that's where I'm going to show you. See, my nose just can't stop right now, so you can see. Sorry. What I did on top portion of this page, summarize the information we have. That's it. So you can see Sunday, Monday, you know, the week is how they computed. I provide a bit of detail so people can follow, okay? And then number of day of the week, number of workers required, so you summarize.
Excuse me.
Thank you. And then define the decision variables. You can see what I did was I actually used the first letter of each combination because that can give me some information, you know what I mean? Instead of X1, X2, you know. Again, that part up to you. So whatever approach you feel appropriate, and that's just my way, always try to make something informative. What is the objective function over here? Objective function is to minimize the total cost. We developed the wages for each shift, and then multiply by the number of people in that shift, give you the objective function. Again, we minimize the objective function. Question. Anybody okay with this? You okay? Everybody? Okay. Now, once this is done, the rest is trivial. So you can see the way we work out the constraint is really won't take much effort at all. So you can see that's the constraint we have. So what happened is if you look at the top row, and if somebody working on Sunday and Monday, I'm going to take off on Sunday and Monday. So the guy is going to take 2 days off. So Saturday and Sunday is going to be off as well. See? So you can see on two sides, you got two zeros, and in the middle, you got ones. And then that pattern persists over the next few days for different shifts. You see the pattern, everybody? Do you have any difficulties with that? See, essentially shift each day and then just block 2 days consecutively take off. That's it. Greater than equals number of people required by the production scheduling. That's it. And each of these decision variables has to be greater than equal zero and must be integer. And then how do you implement that in Excel? You provide one more row as constraints, and they, you know, just specify they are integers besides their greater than equal zero. So go ahead.
They're taking off Saturday and Sunday. Why are there zeros Monday, Tuesday, Tuesday? You know what I'm saying? Or they're just taking off Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah. See, the first rule. You talk about the first rule?
Yeah.
The first rule, you know, if somebody take off on Saturday and the Sundays, those two places are going to be zero. The second rule is somebody taking off on Sunday and Mondays. And then you can see the zeros received. And then the third rule is somebody taking off on Monday and Tuesdays. Those are taking off. Okay? Just be careful, you know, and overcome that hurdle. Sometimes we may see that as the days are working.
And do they always have to take off 2 days in a row?
Again, depends on the situation. You see? So this problem, if you read the initial statement in the problem, that's what they say. You're going to work 5 days in a row, take 2 days off. But in many cases, it's not a situation. Look at the nurses in the hospital. Nurses in the hospital only require to work 3 days, 12 hours each day, and then take work 4 days and take 3 days off. And then the head nurse, you know, has the authority to flexibly schedule that time. You see? So that's, you can see the difference. Any question? And again, the solution to this should be trivial. As I said, you know, you just implement in Excel exactly like what we had here as a LP problem and solve it. That's it. Okay? And be sure you include the integer constraint over there, and Excel will handle that for us without much problem. Everybody okay with this? I want to answer questions. What's the basis of integer linear programming? And what's the new stuff behind integer linear programming versus LP? See, otherwise, you know, it's not making sense why we have a whole chapter about it, you know. So I want to kind of cover a little bit of it, okay? Now, because we are towards to the end of the semester, and we do not have a lot of time to, you know, to get into a lot of it, so I want to give you a very brief overview, and then that's pretty much it. So we're going to have one example today, and maybe one more example on Thursday. That's pretty much it. Okay, now, integer programming. The example we have here is the classical example we had before, so you should have no problem, okay? And we use the 50x plus 40y. And in this example, in the textbook, you use 350, 300. So that won't make any difference. Now, couple of things, new concepts. Number one is, what is the so-called LP relaxation of integer LP problem. Okay. So if you look at this formulation, without the last row, x and y must be integer, that problem is going to be what we call a LP linear programming relaxation of the corresponding integer linear programming problem. Because we take out this integer constraint away. And then solve the problem as an LP problem. Many times, you're going to get decimal points for x and y's, you know. So a few times, you may get exactly integers, but very few. It's not the norm. So we have to devise a way to actually obtain optimal solution or close to optimal solution for integer LP problem. The optimal solution of the integer LP problem is not going to be guaranteed to be the integer LP problem. You solve for example, in this case, we take out the last integer constraints, we solve the LP problem, and we may get a fraction of the solution. X and Y may be fractions. And what are you going to do? Round up, round off, whatever? So, before we get into those answers, look at another concept. It's called a bounds. Okay? What is bounds? bounds refers to if we have a maximization problem, and the LP relaxation is going to give you a maximized objective function value, just like in our situation here. Remember that 50x plus 40y, and we got x equals, in this case, okay, let me just flip this over. In our example over here, you know, if you look at this, 50x plus 40y, x equals 2 1/7 and y equals 1 3/7. What's our approach to it? We have different ways to solve it. Now, there are concepts I want to kind of discuss first. It's called a bound. When we have a LP optimal solution as LP relaxation of an integer linear programming problem, the objective function of this LP relaxation, in this case, 1 64 2/7, the corresponding optimal integer LP solutions cannot be better than this 1 64 2/7. This LP relaxation serves as the upper bound for any integer LP maximization problem. Okay. For minimization problem, we try to minimize the objective function. So the LP relaxation for the integer LP problem serves as the lower bound for the minimization problem. The integer LP problem minimizes the objective function cannot be lower than the LP relaxation of the corresponding integer LP problem. You understand? So this concept is very important. Okay, so that's what we call the bound. Now, and go back to my conclusion over here. You can see, you know, the bounds for objective function value for the integer LP problem. You know, the objective function value of LP relaxation is the upper bound for maximization problem, an integer LP maximization problem. And then the objective function value of the LP relaxation is the lower bound for minimized integer LP problem. So this concept is very useful. In the future, when we try to devise a way to attack the optimal solution of the integer linear programming problem. Okay? And there are different ways to do it. And just kind of take a little bit of space, okay? And as I said, we are not going to get into a lot of those stuff. Just give you a very basic concept. The solution to integer LP problem, people may say, why not just round up, round off, you know, see whether or not it can give us a solution. The problem is, when you round up, round off, you really do not know whether or not you are in the feasible region. It's very likely you are not in the feasible region. All your efforts wasted. That's number one. Number two, when you have 50 variables, 150 constraints, it's not feasible. It's not possible you can enumerate each point and then identify the feasible solution. So round down, round off, and enumerate each point, it's not a solution. And we show that, you know, early on in the second half of the semester, you know, you try to enumerate the extreme points for the LP solution on the graph. Yes, you can do for two variables, few points, but when you have more variables, many points, it can be done. Cannot done, you know. A commonly used approach is called a branch and bound. So branch and bound is, look at the problem we had, you know, 2.17x and, you know, 1 3/7y, and we say, okay, now let's start with x. So we separate x from 2, you know, more than 2, and less than 2. So that's called a branch. Okay? And then you look at those two branches, you know, greater than 2, less than 2, and then see how many feasible points in each branch. Eventually, you come down to the bound. You know, remember we said that the lower bound, you know, served by the optimal solution or upper bound for maximization problem. if each branch, when we switch over, and the bonds can tell us no improvement can be made in that branch, we get rid of that branch. So this procedure attracted a lot of attention in the past, and I actually did my dissertation very close related to those. Okay, so you got to believe there are a lot of things can be learned. Okay, now starting rules. We got so many variables and where can start? I mean, you know, so you do not know what's the principle. Principle is you see the improvements. You see your objective function improvements. If the objective function can improve within, say, one or two tenths of a percent, and you may just quit. Because any additional efforts will give you much improvement, and that's not a worse effort. Is you understand? So that's called a starting rule. And Excel, actually, in the option part, specify there, give you that option. So you want to specify the starting rule. Okay, so that's the kind of things, you know, behind this, and I want to quickly show you what the chapter actually said about this. Okay, so okay, now if you look at this graph, that's the graph, you know, the optimal relaxation, LP relaxation of the solution is over here. You see, if you round up in this case, if you round up, you know, over here, it's not feasible. If you run down over here, it may not be optimal. And the same thing over here. Nobody know which point is going to be optimal solution. Okay? So that's the kind of thing, you know, you got those many integer points. So each point is a potential solution, but nobody know which one is going to be the optimal solution, give you the optimal objective function value. So what's the concept of branch and bound? Here is the concept of branch bound. You can see in this case, if our solution is in between 2 and 3, we cut X in between 2 and 3. So 3 is going to be one branch, and 2 and lower going to be in another. And then we look at the bounds and see how many integer points inside, and then see the lower bound, whether or not, you know, if you have a maximization problem, and those bounds established for each small feasible region cannot be any better, you know, than your initial identified bounds, you know, with LP relaxation or in other branches, you can get rid of each of those small feasible regions. So and then just work piece by piece. In this case, you may cut horizontally over here, get another two branches. And then, you know, you cut over here, get another two branches. You know what I mean? So that's the so-called branch and bound. And eventually, hopefully you can get your solution. So again, you know, we only care you'll be able to understand, you know, integer programming, a lot of applications. So solution procedure is a little bit different. So that's the situation. So I think I show you this example already, right? This example. So any question? So that's pretty much the integer programming stuff we're going to cover. And next time I may cover one more example. That's pretty much it. Let's look at this problem here. Look at this problem, okay? Remember a long time ago, I asked you to do sensitivity analysis, identify, you know, the points within the bounds of the, look at this, that's the, over here, that's the, my cursor, but yeah. See, this portion, that's the sensitivity table, okay, this portion. That's this portion, the sensitivity table, I just copy over there for convenience. And if I drag my cursor over there, let you see the numbers, okay? You can see the potential lower and upper bound for it, okay? I want you to try to remember the numbers, okay? For 50, the lower bound is going to be 50 minus 30, give you 20, am I right? And the upper bound is going to be 50 plus 16.67, going to be 66.67, am I right? Upper bound. And then you look at 40. The coefficient 40 is going to have a lower bound of 40 minus 10 be 30. Upper bound is going to be 40 plus 60 is going to be 100. Is that correct? I want to show you how one approach we did early on in the decision analysis, sensitivity analysis, can benefit what we're doing here if you have two variables. Okay? See what I'm doing here. That's objective function. Okay? I put my cursor. Let me go ahead and erase this portion. Okay? Let me erase this. Okay? So, what's happened? I want to erase this. Clean content. Cannot change. Right. Why I can change? I want to clear this. Okay, now this shell I can say equal and then link to the objective function. Okay, you can see that's the objective function on top. I press enter, and those can be blank, those areas. I don't know why I can delete those. Okay, so I have no idea. But what I did was I look at the bounds for 50. Lower bound is 20, upper bound is 50 plus 66. So from I just be sure I get one number is lower than the lower bound, and then that's the upper bound, bound of them in the middle, and then I got one or two numbers more than upper bound behind the 66. Okay. And then look at the 40. 40, it's going to change from 30 to 100. So I got one number lower than the low bound, I got a number in the middle, and then upper bound, more than upper bound. I want to see when those two coefficients change in such a way in a combination, what are going to be my objective function there? That's what I want to show you. Okay? So it's very easy to do. The only thing is to set this A174 equal to your objective function equation. That's what I did a few minutes ago, okay? And then establish those numbers for the objective function coefficient. And then you highlight this whole table. Highlight this whole portion, okay? You see? Highlight them. Now, this middle portion of the table, initially, they are blank. Nothing. Okay? And then what are you going to do? You click on top of the screen, you select the data, and then select what if analysis. Where is my what if analysis? So I have to find where it is. So I saw it's in the data formula, maybe formula. It's in data. Got to be somewhere. So, what if? Okay, so this one is about if. Okay, so I just click on this, and then come on to the data table. Click on this. Okay, now looking for the raw cell input cell. You just put your cursor inside the box, and then raw input cell refers to 40, that location. Okay, and then put your cursor in the column input cell, and then go back to click the location of 50. Everybody got it? Then click OK. See? So that will give you the whole thing. Very efficient. And hopefully some of you, when you work on your coursework in the process, in other courses, you might be wanting to benefit you. So it's very quick. Remember a long time ago we did you by hand, those kind of things, run several each time. But you can see you can actually get this done in just seconds. I didn't pay much attention until during the weekend somebody mentioned this, and I thought I might try this. So it works. Question. You okay, guys? Okay, last thing. The test number one on Blackboard. This test number one is a test last semester. So I was auditing the class, and I actually took three tests with people in those classes. So the test is about seven questions, and 1 hour 15 minutes are the normal classes. And you're going to have more time than that, because we're going to be next Wednesday evening, as what we did before, in I think 105, that's correct. And you know, if you expect you're going to take longer, come over early, you know. So I think we can start about 6:30, maybe a little bit early, if you know, the classroom is not occupied, okay? The key is to understand the problem before you write down the solution. Do not create a lot of garbage waste your time, you know. So look at this problem. This problem says we want to kind of have a sampling about opinions from Republican, Democrats, Independents. You know, in the election year, so it's obviously a pretty nice example. And what happened is, you can see when I read them through, I marked certain, you know, places 1, 2, 3, 4. Those are the constraints I identified. So you can see later on, I, you know, just double checked. I didn't get anything left off, you know. So there are three major questions. Decision variables, you need to clearly define. Objective function with the goals, minimization, maximization, constraints. Identify all those constraints, okay? So that's what we're going to do. Now, the answers to this question are going to be posted, okay? So I'm going to post the answers. So that's the one I did on the text. So you can see, handwriting, hopefully you can recognize. And decision variables I define RM and RF, DM, DF, independent M, independent F, male, female, you know, voters, for example. And then you look at the objective function to minimize the cost of the sampling. And 9, 11, 10 refers to the cost coefficient to interview each person in that category. So you need to read the top portion of the problem carefully to get that. And then you come down to those constraints. So the best way is to work piece by piece. No go, no hurry, piece by piece. And be sure you get that wrong, that you get that correct before you move on, you know. So the first one is interview at least 4,500 people. So male, female for each party, those are the total possible choices. You got six possible kinds of people, and it should be greater than equals 4,500. So that's the first one. And then you look at the second one. Independent should be more than, you know, 1,000. So it's greater than equals 1,000. No less than 1,000. So that's the second one. The third one, males be interviewed more than two, should be a minimum of 2,000. So you can see minimum 2,000 is greater than equals 2,000. And then you look at females, should be at least 1750. So at least 1750 converted into greater than equals 1750. Okay? Now, look at the next one. The Democrat, okay? 40% of those may be Democrat, so Democrat male plus Democrat female gonna be less than 40% of the total people in the view. You okay, guys? Everybody okay with that? And then you look at the rest, okay? So let me move down this page a little bit so you can see that. So you can see the next one is number six. And the problem is, I have to go down a little bit, you know, let you see, okay? Look at number six. So pay attention to number six. I made one mistake there, and I want you to tell me what was the mistake. Actually, the teacher didn't find that out until I was in class today, you know. It says, you know, maximum of 1/4 of those pooled may be Republican males, okay? So that means Republican males cannot be more than 25%. Is that correct? I should not have this. You follow what I'm doing? This one is wrong. Okay?
Okay. So so that's the that's this part. But otherwise, this portion is correct. Okay. But this one is too much. So so that's and then the last part, the last constraint is each category must be at least 10% of the total. So that's the bottom one. So let me go ahead and drag that down and then let you see. See, that's the way, you know, 10% be modeled. Essentially, you have six identical constraints like this. I kind of try to, you know, save time, so I only write on one of them. It is acceptable, like this. Okay? So that gives you the full solution for the first problem. Question? You okay, guys? Let's move on. The second problem is this. Given the following objective function, you do not know it's minimization or maximization problem. You do not know. And then give you those constraints, ask you to identify the optimal solution and answer a few questions. Okay? So I think we have enough time to get this one done. Okay? So let's see. I will try to get my cursor. Where is my cursor? Okay. Okay, now that's the one I posted on Blackboard, so you should be able to find this. I actually deleted the solutions, and I will post the solutions, you know, after the class. That's the problem, and that's the graph. I redraw the graph. You can see, so you can work on this, okay? Let me talk about a little bit of this graph. This line is objective function line. Objective function line, you do not have a minimization or maximization problem. Based on this line with a sign, do you believe it is a maximization problem or minimization problem? Minimize, right? Because, you know, it's moving downward. Remember what we said, you know, if an objective function moving downward towards to the origin, it's going to be minimization problem. It's moving upward and away from the origin, going to be maximization problem. Okay? So in this case, you know the objective function there is going to be minimization problem moving this way. This line reflects equation number 5. It's given. But you can see equation number 5 over there, you know, x greater than 0.6, x plus y. And you have to figure out this line, which side is bigger. If you look at that x greater than equals, and that's where I made another mistake. You can see on the test, you know, mine is not working the same way as otherwise. X greater than equals 0.6x plus 0.6y, if I open that parenthesis on the right-hand side. And then I move that on the right-hand side back to the left-hand side, I'm going to get a 0.4x minus 0.6y greater than or equal 0. Everybody follow what I'm doing here? Okay, now, I can multiply 10 on both sides without changing nothing, am I right? So eventually I got a 4x minus 6y greater than or equal 0. You follow what I'm doing here, everybody? Okay, if that's the case, 4x minus 6y greater than or equal 0, that means our x, 4x going to be larger than 6y. So we're going to be in this portion. Okay? That concept take a little bit while. I made a mistake. I thought it's upward. But at this downside, this portion is invisible. This part is. Because 4x minus 6y give you this portion. Okay? Let's look at the rest. So once you have this, you should be able to work out the rest without much problem. So let me see. See, you look at each equation, work out the coordinates, and you draw each line on the graph. Let's work out one by one, okay? Line number one, x equals 4x plus 5y greater than equals 20. You got x equals 0, y equals 4. That's this point. Y equals, x equals 5. That's this point. And y equals 0. Y equals 0. So that's your this one. Okay, that's line number one. Okay? And then the line number two. 0, 3. So 0, 3, that's this point. And then 1.5 and 0. So that's this point. If you line up here. Both of them upward. You can see I have an arrow pointing upward. So that's this way. Now, this number 4 is upward, but number 1 is more, is restricted. So number 4 is redundant. Okay? And then you're looking at number 3, 0, 2, that's this point. And then 8, 0, that's this point. You lined up like this. That's number 3. Okay? Also upward. And then you look at number 4, 0, 10. 0, 10, and then 12, 0. That's this line moving downward. You can see I have an arrow here moving downward. So I know this region possibly be the potential feasible region. But I made a mistake. Remember I said, you know, this line number 5 actually cut the feasible region in two pieces. This portion is not feasible, but the lower portion is feasible. You understand? That is why, you know, clearly understand the problem is more than anything else, try to solve it. You see? And then once you have that, this one is objective function. Moving downward, if you are in the feasible region like this, if I initially figure out, you know, this portion is the feasible region, so the later, the lowest portion I can move is going to be this point. You see what I'm saying? That's where I got my optimal solution. I got probably one point deducted. It didn't deduct much. It's a minor mistake. You see what I'm saying? But the optimal solution is supposed to be over here until this point. Because this portion is invisible. This portion is visible. You got it? Everybody? Go back. I'm going to post this on Blackboard, and I'm going to let you look at it, okay? So let's go ahead, you know, with the rest of the questions. And so I'll let you go. So give me 2 more minutes. I think there are a few questions need to talk about. So let's go ahead and answer those few questions before we leave.
Draw the constraint line for the problem and identify the feasible region so we know it. Is constraint 3 redundant? So 3 is this line. So this line is not redundant because that's feasible region, so it's not redundant. Okay? And solve graphically of this problem, and you can see the region I specify, this portion of feasible region, so I give an answer over here. See that? But it's supposed to be here. Because this portion is infeasible. You can see the mark, you know, the teacher remarked me, so that I made a mistake. So it's supposed to be this part, okay? And then it's a minimization problem. And then the another concept is unbounded and alternative optimal solution. So what is unbounded solution? If we do not have this line, number 4, if we do not have number 4 pointing downward, this objective function line is going to move downward whatever you want, because you do not have any bound horizontally to limit the objective function's move. In that situation, it's called unbounded solution. In real business situation, you do not encounter unbounded solution, because you do not have unlimited resources. X, you know, you can change along X whatever you want. It's not going to happen. You do not have that case. So whenever you see an unbounded solution, your formulation has problem. Alternative optimal solution. If we have another constraint over here, okay, cut in the feasible region like this. This line parallel with my objective function, okay? When the objective function line moves downward, eventually going to overlap with this line. You see what I'm saying? That portion of the line in between these 2 points, okay, this line, any point on the line going to be a solution. So you're going to have a limited number of alternative optimal solutions. The solution is different. X-Y combination is going to be different. The coordinate is going to be different. But the objective function value is going to be the same. Why? Because, you know, everything is parallel to this objective line, they're going to be on the same objective line. So anything on the same objective function line is going to share identical objective function value. That's what we call alternative optimal. Okay? Those 2 things, unbounded solution, alternative optimal, they can exist simultaneously. You can. Why? Because this alternative optimal already limits your feasible region. You see what I'm saying? So in this case, so you can easily have a counter case for that. So I think that's pretty much the time I have. And if you have any questions, let me know. Otherwise, I'll talk to you. Thanks a lot. I may not have office hours. I think I'd better, you know, lay down bed. I mean, Jesus.
Sorry if I just dropped it.